Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the September 19, 2021 session, focusing on Mark chapter 9, verses 30 through 37, A Child's Way. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm David Adams.
I'm Laura Edgar.
Well, you just heard a new voice on our podcast. We are really excited to have Laura Edgar with us today. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
Now, you're coming to us from
Auburn, Alabama.
Auburn, Alabama. Gosh, we don't often allow Alabamans on the podcast. But I think we could do it this time because Bert's not on the podcast.
Oh, there you go.
Wow. Yeah, we upgraded.
Yes, we did. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So Laura is the associate pastor for youth, college, and young adults at First Baptist Church, Auburn, Alabama. So it sounds like you really don't have that much on your plate.
No, all kinds of free time. That's great.
How long have you been doing this there?
6 years.
Wow. Yeah.
6 years. Well, they must like you. They're keeping you.
I guess so, you know. COVID at least made it where people couldn't think too much about that. So.
Okay. Yeah. A little job security through that.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, we're awfully happy to have you with us, Laura, today. Crystal and Daniel are both on vacation, and we hope they are having a wonderful and restful time. So, my question for you today is, how competitive are you?
Well, I'm more competitive than you are.
No, you're not. Yes,
I can prove it.
You are fairly competitive, Dave.
Can be.
Yes.
What brings it out in you?
A day ending in Y, usually.
No, tell us about your gaming interest.
Well, okay, if we're going to go there a little bit.
Yes.
Actually, that was my sermon last Sunday, was about how everything you need to know about the road to the promised land is found in how you play games.
Really?
And how you approach competition, how you approach the pleasure of just being with other people, doing things together. All those things you bring to a gaming situation are really important indications of how you play the game of life, really, and again, how you view a promised land. It was an easy sermon for me because I have a very large game collection. I've been collecting them for 50 years, probably, so I have a ton of games in my house, just overwhelming me, more than books now. And so,
what's your favorite game?
It's whatever we're playing that day.
Okay,
I play a lot of Dominion. And there's a new game about birds out there called Wingspan that my family has decided that they like to play too.
Really?
So playing a lot of Wingspan. It is hard to get Wingspan sometimes. It sells out so fast.
Really?
It's very difficult to acquire. Can be.
I may have to check that out. My son loves games.
It sounds like they're flying off the shelves.
They have been.
Gosh. Oh,
sorry.
You are not. Don't say you're sorry when you're not. I am not competitive, generally speaking. Sometimes I like to play competitive, like pretend like I am, just because I want to get in on the action with people. So I'll group up with people and cheer for the team with them and look competitive. But it's really not something that, like, I never care. Like, I don't, you know, and it doesn't mean I've never been competitive in my life. Like, I remember fighting with my sister quite a bit over things and, you know, that kind of stuff. but typically I don't know what that says about how I game and approach life, Adams, but,
it's not something.
What?
Type one of the three types that I talked about.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm just not. I really am just here to have fun. Right. And so if I play a game with somebody or if we're, you know, whatever, as long as I'm having fun, I'm happy.
How's it fun if you don't win?
Exactly.
I get that a lot. Right. It's hard to explain. I don't know.
No, that's probably really good.
So it sounds like you might be competitive.
A little, you know, I can watch an old football game that's recorded that happened years ago that I know what happens, and I'll still cheer and yell. You know.
Now, what football team would that be?
Auburn.
Oh, University, okay. Yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. You are a proud alum, aren't you?
I am. Yeah. So, now, I honestly.
You know, I was born in Alabama, so technically you've got an Alabaman on here.
Oh, my goodness. We've got to rethink everything.
I know. But I was raised a Crimson Tide fan.
Oh, no. Okay.
I know.
You really do need to rethink.
But remember, I'm not competitive. So if you want me to come cheer with you, let me know, and I'll join up. And I know that's heresy. But but seriously, like...
Oh, gosh. Well, and we're recording this the day before football season starts in the SEC. Right. So it's, you know, I've got my Arkansas Razorback shirt on and mug. So, Laura, we're representing.
That's right. We're excited.
Until we play each other, and then we don't want to talk.
Right.
Yeah. You'll probably win.
I don't know this year.
Oh, well, I am very competitive. I do like to have fun, and I enjoy playing games, and I can play a game and not be upset for losing, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to try to win. And yes. It's actually worse outside of games that my competitive side comes into play. So at business or work, or I don't want to be, but I just am competitive. So yeah, sorry about that. But, you know, hey, it's a motivator. And, anyway, competition is, you know, it's one of those pieces of human nature, and we all have some level or not of it. And I envy you, Nikki, a bit on your peacefulness and fun-loving manner. I need to try to embrace that more. But we have a text today that maybe also reflects some of the competitiveness of the folks around Jesus at the time. So, Nikki, would you help us get started? Oh, I'm supposed to say something more. I saw Nikki's expression. So you may be wondering, wait a minute, Nikki never does an intro. Well, she's going to do an intro today. However, this intro is the script from the Bible background video that Nikki does for Faith Element. So if you are a Faith Element subscriber, you have access to Nikki's video every week. And the nice thing there is it's a video, it's not just audio. And you can get both the podcast, which is free to everybody. But if you're a subscriber, you also get Nikki's video, you get her script, and you get all of the cool session pages that David Adams edits together and our wonderful writers write. So it's a lot of stuff, really, but you're going to get a taste today of the Bible background. Now, a lot of our intros are more, how shall we say, sermonic sometimes, or rhetorical, or humorous, or any of that. Nikki's Bible background is, and Nikki, you can say more about this if you want, but she really does try to give us a core kind of brief introduction into the text. And part of the function of that in the curriculum is to relieve the teacher from feeling like you have to carry that load. A lot of us aren't Bible scholars. Nikki is. And so she's able to bring that expertise and share that with us, which allows us to more quickly move into conversation, which is exactly what we try to model here on the podcast. So, Nikki, correct me if I've misrepresented, but if you need to say more about how you shape these, but also get us going.
Sure, absolutely. No, you said it just right. I'll add, I have a pastor friend here in Atlanta. His name is Christian Smith, and he has a saying. He says, a text without a context is just a con. I actually think he says it better than that. I don't think I got the quote exactly right. So, but you get the idea. And so that's what I aim to do with the Bible background, is to provide the context needed to understand the basics of what's going on in the text, to enable conversation about it to go a little more smoothly. So I'll get us started for today. Today's session is looking at Mark 9, verses 30 through 37. This passage is similar to the Mark passage we engaged last week. It begins with Jesus announcing his passion, which is Jesus talking about how he will be betrayed and then killed and then rise again. Then Jesus goes on to talk about discipleship. In today's text, the teaching on discipleship begins with Jesus asking the disciples what they are arguing about. and they respond much like my children do when I catch them arguing about something. They went silent, probably staring at the ground and dragging the toe of their sandals in the dirt. They didn't want to tell Jesus they had been talking about who the greatest of them would be. It's kind of like, even though they did not fully understand what Jesus meant when he taught them, they knew enough to know that wondering about who the greatest would be wasn't really part of it. Then we learn, Jesus asks them what they were arguing about, even though he already knew what it was. Jesus is kind of tricky that way. So he tells them what we've heard him say over and over again. Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all. Then Jesus pivots and tells them that whoever welcomes a child also welcomes him and the one who sent him. Now, Jesus' words were pretty radical because in that time, Jesus were seen more as a burden and second-class citizens. They were not only to not be heard, but also not seen. For Jesus to bring the child front and center would have been disorienting, much like when he touched lepers or ate with tax collectors. I'm not sure that today children are welcomed any better. Even in communities where children are given all that they need, there's still a sense that parents often use children to fulfill their own emptiness. Too often, though, children are not given all that they need. In our own country, they're abused in a myriad of ways at the hands of people who are supposed to care for them. At the border, children have been traumatized as they've been separated from their parents as a means to deter others from coming. Where there is war in our world, children are often killed in conflict or recruited to fight for one side or the other. Fred Wentz, a writer for the Political Theology Network, writes, "Jesus received children, mistreated throughout history, and when the disciples began to bicker and argue about who was the greatest, he set a child before them saying, 'Whoever receives one such child receives me and the one who sent me.' If we want to receive the kingdom, we must receive our king. This king is not received by pomp and circumstance, but by humility and servitude. He is received by those who are willing to receive a child the way he did." I think Jesus knew that welcoming children is a wonderful antidote to our concerns about who is better than who and who has the most power. Until the world teaches children to be concerned about such things, it is not what motivates them. Have you ever sat on the floor and played with children? Worries about who is better and who has power melts away. Curiosity, delight, and connection are what take center stage. Following Jesus is all about vulnerability. It's not about power and greatness. Jesus calls us to become vulnerable in service to one another, and to care for those who are vulnerable, like children. May we all truly welcome children and learn from their way in the world.
Nikki, I really liked how you shaped this. In particular, I liked your comment about how welcoming children is an antidote to our concerns about who is better than who or who has the most power. Because we really need some antidotes for those tendencies, and I think it's kind of helpful to think in terms of an antidote that you know, when we find ourselves in a situation where power is at play or power games are at play,
right.
And, you know, they're all around us. To think about the children, that's something I think I could do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think about, you know, when we pull it out on a big scale, like in government, it feels like oftentimes governments and people who are in power are always back and forth about who's in power and who has the money and who has all the energy following them. And so often in that mix, children are the ones who are harmed the most. And I think if we can invert the way that we look at it and see the way that our behavior affects children, it fundamentally could change the way that we approach those same discussions.
I think, like you said, as children are the ones who are harmed. And then that just keeps the cycle going because they learn mm-hmm. from what they have seen and
that's right,
what they have experienced. And so we end up never breaking that cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think too, like, because I was thinking about, you know, I was thinking about the world and the way children have been treated through history and in other places in the world, but sometimes here in the United States, and I imagine in other places, it can look like children become the most important thing. Like we kind of put them front and center and we put all, we give them tons of things to do and all the toys and all of that, but I'm not sure that that's really what it means to welcome children. That's really more about putting our stuff on them rather than letting their way teach us. You know, as a mother of children, I when they were little, in my best moments, I would stop what I was doing and I would watch them and I would see what they saw and I would see what they observed. And it was always things I never saw, always things I was never paying attention to, but it always brought a measure of peace and joy when I could make myself do that.
And I think that sometimes this focus on children that you were talking about can be a way of buying them off.
Mm-hmm.
They'll leave us alone. They'll go away and be at their own devices, not bother us. If we just let mm-hmm. them sit in front of the TV, if we just give them this toy or that toy, they yeah. won't bother us. They're inconvenient for us right now. So we just pay whatever we have to entertain them long enough for us to get what we want from them. I'm very cynical today. This is my cynical day. So, but it's hard not to. We're recording this right before Labor Day. And all we've been talking about really for the past month in the United States has been children going back to school and what's going to happen when they get there, especially in the face of a pandemic. And the reality that children can get sick and we're not doing enough to protect them. And instead of doing everything we can to protect every child we can, we're saying, I should have a right to decide what happens to my child. And that's really messed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And using them to make our own statements about whether to wear a mask or not to wear a mask or, you know, things like that. And they really shouldn't be used in that way.
Right. And again, that's not welcoming children. Nope. I keep having this memory of this video I saw a long time ago. I'll have to search it and see if I can get it for you. But in the video, it was a dance studio and there was a male and a female dancer. I think they were married and their child was there with them. And the child was probably 2.5, 3 years old. And they put on the music and then they mimicked all the movements that the child did. So they didn't teach the child to dance. They danced the child's movements.
Wow.
And so you can imagine like a toddler putting a hand down and like falling and so not super steady, but then also maybe rolling or stretching. And it ended up being this very beautiful moving thing, but they had to let themselves not be in control and they had to hand the reins over to the child. And I think so often we talk about, I mean, Whitney Houston sang it, the children are our future, right? But actually the children are our present. And if we can pay attention to them in the present, then we will gain something from them. We will learn from them how to live this life.
You know, I think one of the best ways that congregations can do this is through intergenerational kinds of settings where we, because we're so, and I'm not saying there's not a place for us to separate into age groups, but there is also a place for us to celebrate those times when we can gather intergenerationally. I was part of a church years ago that would regularly do family mission trips. And so the whole family would go. So there'd be parents with children, there'd be grandparents, there'd be older adults, there'd be and teenagers. And we all went and we did the parts we could do of the work. And I think for the children to be part of that was a real esteem building. I can do this too. I am important too. What I do and care about matters too. And I think that was so healthy, but they also got to form relationships with other adults, youth, and I think that enriched the mission trip and the experience for the adults, maybe more than for the children, just as you've been describing, because we see things differently when we see them through the experience of a child. I'm curious what you all think about the activity of the disciples in this passage, that they were arguing about who was the greatest, which is a real, you know, we can see that, we can understand that. But on the other hand, you're like, you're traveling around with Jesus. Have you not learned anything, right? And so, I mean, what is there anything to be learned from the behavior of these disciples?
Other than it's another one of their great adventures in missing the point. And there was a really big feature of the Gospel of Mark, though, that Jesus knew what was going on, and disciples were just a bunch of ninnies running around, always missing the point.
And, that's how Mark wrote it. Fact, you're right.
The best quote I've ever heard about this was from a guy named Brett Younger. Some of us may have heard of him. He wrote that if you read the Gospel of Mark, at times it'll seem like the disciples thought that Jesus was a taco short of a combination platter.
Yeah, they weren't the sharpest tools in the shed.
Yeah. No. No.
It does make you wonder, though, if this byplay of talking about children and accepting children might be going further, because, you know, as Nikki pointed out, people had certain thoughts about children, about how insignificant they were back then. And could he have been saying, hey, look, you guys don't even get it as well as this child gets it? Could it have been a reaction? You're so dense that even this child I'm holding in my lap's got a better idea of what's going on than you do.
But it's probably a value statement too, though, right? Here's what's great. Here's what's important.
Adam's what you said. They didn't get it. And children do. But I think that can be, let's see, that can be instructive for us, because when we are children, we see the world as children do. And as we grow, we take on all of these other things, the concern about how well we do at our job, and did we get the highest grade, and are we the coolest friend, or, you know, whatever it is that matters to us, and all of it, and it becomes about who has the power and who's in charge and how can I get more of whatever that is that everybody else wants. And so there is a sense that all of us, as a part of the way life kind of happens, has to learn how to shed that and remember what it was like to be children. I think that's part of the human experience. Even for somebody not competitive like me, you know, I mean, I don't look at the world the way children do. And I could really benefit from doing that.
And that competitive nature, I just want to win. I just want to, you know, get ahead, and whatever that looks like in the particular situation, whatever that means, you know. And I think Jesus reminds them with, you know, looking at a child, even reminds us of all who are vulnerable, you know, that we would say, well, clearly they're not winning, you know, they're not getting ahead, and that's not what it's actually about, you know, winning and getting ahead and measuring success in all the ways that we do. But as you've said, stopping and being able to see things through the eyes of a child. And
Laura, I like that you brought up that it kind of brings up all vulnerable people. And I do think that if we pay attention to Jesus throughout the scriptures, he does say, be like a child, but he also calls us to be like all vulnerable people. He calls us to enter into that space. And so I love that you make that connection, that it's not just about being like a child, but it is about that innocence and that vulnerability and the clarity that comes with that. You know, it's just a less muddled way of being, I think. So like, I love that connection.
Thinking like a vulnerable person is a really interesting way to think. Just coming from the educator's perspective, for instance, if you have people who don't feel they're vulnerable and you're trying to teach them something, by and large, they don't want to hear it, or they want to hear it their way or their spin on
right.
it. If you have a vulnerable person who's going to right. learn something, they're eager and attentive and want to hear what you have to say because it's helpful.
Yeah.
It's meaningful for them. And
yes.
there is this guy, Bert Sumler, the other, who once wrote in a book about how we could solve the healthcare crisis in this country if all we did was make hospitals live up to the name on the sign. It's always Saint this or Mercy that or something of that nature. And if people just lived up to that, we'd be okay. And it struck me when I read that's how a child might think. They'll see a sign that says Saint somebody and assume, oh, this is a place where I'll be taken care of. A vulnerable person who needs help is going to see this mercy thing written on a sign and think, this is a place I can come for mercy. But for some reason, society doesn't want to think that way. We don't want to be like the children who read the signs.
Okay, so I'm getting older, and I look back on life, and when I think back to when my children were at home and young, I think it's almost, how do I say this? I wonder why it is that we have children during the time at which we have to work the hardest to make a living and build our careers. Because I look back on those days and how busy I was and how I was trying to build something, both a career and a family, and yet they were so little. And those moments of childhood are so fleeting. And so I'm like, I've got all this time and attention. But my kids are all grown up. Not that they still don't, you know, need attention, but you know what I'm saying? Those special childlike years of wonder and curiosity and vulnerability, they pass by so quickly. And I do feel for parents with young children in this society and culture where somehow we are torn between giving the attention to them that they both deserve and we need. And making a living to care for them and pay for their college maybe one day. So, I mean, it's a tough thing. And so, you know, have some grace for those parents around you and in your congregations. Raising kids is challenging, but it's particularly challenging with all the other demands that our culture and society put on us. The philosopher Dostoevsky is... Is that something we quote here a lot? But I really like a statement of his. It's very brief, but I like it. I think it fits with what Jesus was trying to communicate. What Dostoevsky says is the soul is healed by being with children. Mm-hmm. The soul is healed by being with children. There's not a lot to add to that.
No.
And maybe when Jesus plops a child in front of us and says, hey, quit bickering, focus on what's really important, maybe Jesus is also calling us to have our souls healed. May we each find a child to sit in our lap and learn from.
Amen.
Thank you. Thank you all for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Subscribe to the Faith Element podcast on iTunes or Google Play. Learn more about our Faith Element Bible study curriculum at faithelement.net. Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.